Fumbling, he opened it to produce a heavier pair, tucking his current glasses inside. The heavier glasses eased the blur of his vision, and he waved a hand to renew his invisibility. The world swam around him again, but he couldn't tell how much of that came from the overexpenditure of sorcery, and how much of it came from his head injury. "I'll need to get that looked at," he noted, half-consciously staggering to the stairs. He was forced to awkwardly dodge a handful of guards as they rushed the stairway, apparently reacting to the woman's earlier call. Jonan's head pulsed with agony as he made his way to exit from the same entrance he had entered, finding an opportunity to sneak out the door as a concerned-looking man shouldered it open to leave. He neither saw nor heard any sign of Lydia, but he hadn't planned to. And right now, he barely had the strength to shiver his way back home on his own. Jonan woke in a bed he had never slept in before. His eyes cracked open, showing him only a vaguely room-shaped blur. A heavy layer of blankets entombed him, and he brushed them aside, hands searching for glasses. A red-crowned blur loomed over him a moment later. Startled, Jonan pushed himself backward and upright. "Looking for these?" came an amused voice from the crimson blur. A pale blur, a hand, he realized, as it approached, offered him an object. Glasses. He snagged them out of the hand greedily, donning the spectacles in an instant. Lydia formed in front of him, and his memories cleared somewhat along with his vision. He was in his home, in his false bedchamber, the one above his real one. He had managed to stumble this far on his own. Lydia must have found him shortly thereafter.
"Thank you,"
he managed to mumble. A shiver ran through him, and he pulled the pile of blankets back atop him. Lydia withdrew from her looming, but only to take a seat at a nearby chair. He tilted his head toward her, noting that she was carrying a half-closed book in her offhand, a stray finger marking her place within the pages.
"How long have I been out?"
"Just about an hour."
Lydia flipped the book back open, looked at something, and then closed it completely and set it aside.
"If you keep shivering like that, I'm going to need to take you to the palace for treatment."
"Oh, that would end well," Jonan mumbled.
"I see your sense of humor is uninjured at least. How about the rest of you?"
Lydia leaned forward in her chair.
"What? You didn't check?"
Jonan lifted his blankets and glanced downward half-heartedly.
"The important bits seem to be there."
"I didn't want to presume," she replied, with just a hint of laughter in her tone. "Did you find anything interesting?"
Jonan looked back at the sorceress.
"Under the blankets or at the research facility?"
Lydia folded her arms.
"At the research facility."
"Ah, it's all business with you."
"Well, yes, actually. In both places. At the research facility, I discovered something rather important. There's a room on the second floor filled with Rethri children. They appear to be unconscious, perhaps through sorceress means. The children have some kind of burns or unusual markings around their eyes."
"And under the blankets?"
Lydia leaned forward a hint further.
What?
Jonan stammered.
"What did you find that was so interesting under the blankets?"
She grinned, adjusting her glasses. Jonan pulled back instinctively as Lydia leaned over, causing her to laugh.
"You tell me I'm all business, and then when I play along, you don't know what to do with yourself,"
Lydia pointed out.
"I was just startled, is all. Let me start over. You'd really have to see it to believe it."
"Better,"
she replied, her grin transcending into smirk.
"But you need more conviction. Anyway, business. Rethri with strange marks around their eyes."
"Right. Business." Jonan let out a sigh of relief. "What a strange woman."
"The markings were in a circular shape. I think they were deliberate, given that Rethri eyes are tied to the Dominions." Lydia's expression shifted into a glower.
"Tell me more about these marks."
"Not much to say, I'm afraid. They looked like blisters, possibly from burns. They were in a roughly circular shape."
"Did they look like letters?"
"I wish I knew." "None that I could identify, but if this was done through some kind of branding process, blisters and scabs could easily conceal the original shape of the markings."
Lydia glanced away from him, her expression grim.
Sounds like they could be the same type of markings that you found around the Asharan.
Potentially, he admitted. I thought of that, but it was too hard to tell.
Did you check several different people to see if the marks on any of them were easier to identify?
I probably should have prioritized that, he considered,
but I had other things on my mind.
I didn't get a chance to do much poking around. Someone discovered me in the room, in spite of my invisibility. I promise I wasn't making a lot of noise either. She was a Rethri woman, wearing the robes of a court sorceress.
Lydia sat up straight in her chair.
A Rethri woman? What did she look like?
Looked like she was about your age. Indigo eyes, brown hair. Skin was about as dark as mine, he explained.
Lydia steepled her fingers, then rested her chin on them.
We have a problem. That wasn't a court sorceress.
Jonan quirked a brow. Oh?
There's no court sorceress that fits that description. I'm fairly sure you've just described Vorain, the fourth god of Orlan.
Jonan shivered, and he couldn't be sure if it was due to the cold that lingered in his veins.
Well, he considered, that complicates things. But at least she wasn't trying to kill me.
Lydia quirked a brow.
What happened when she discovered you?
I should mention that she passed me once earlier, on the way to the room, and I don't think she noticed me at the time. I followed an older human man into the room with the Rethri, and then she got his attention and led him outside. That was when she came in and found me. She told me she knew I was there and she wanted to talk.
What did she want to talk about?
Lydia cracked her fingers, leaning forward again.
She wanted me to surrender. I told her I was there looking for kidnapped Rethri. She told me the kids I had found were not captured. They were plague victims that were being treated. I insisted that they probably weren't, given how regular the burns were around their eyes.
That was most likely a mistake, he continued,
noting that Lydia was leaning closer, apparently transfixed by his story.
So the sorceress, or goddess, if you prefer, blocked the doorway. She wanted me to appear and to surrender. I think she really did want to protect those children. I refused, of course. I was forced to dazzle her with some astounding spell work. It really was quite impressive. You should have been there. And flee the area.
Lydia closed her eyes after that, apparently contemplating in silence for a moment.
I'd show you the spells I used, but I'm afraid I'm a bit too shivery at the moment. And also half blind.
The world around him was sharper with his glasses on, but anything more than a few paces past Lydia was still barely recognizable.
That's fine,
Lydia said absently, waving a hand with a dismissive gesture. And then she went quiet again.
I guess she needs a moment.
He sat up, taking a moment to consider for himself. His head swam in the opposite direction, reminding him of his brief head-to-wall collision.
That's going to be irritating for a while. Okay, what do I know?
Rethri woman is apparently not a sorceress. She's a goddess, or whatever passes for one around here.
There's something that feels off about that.
Several things, actually.
Let's break this down. Rethri was supposed to be kidnapped. There are Rethri here, but at least one of them appears to be operating of her own free will. She could have been coerced, but I have no evidence of that. She's probably been here for quite a while if she's a goddess. I think I remember hearing the most recent god of theirs is Myros, and even he has been around a few years.
I can tell you're thinking, and that's fine, but help me out with one quick question.
What was it about my description that said Vorain to you?
Jonan scratched at his chin, trying to piece things together in his aching mind.
Around 5 years ago, a court sorceress named Vorain was raised to godhood by Adon. Vorain was the first new god of the city after Adon claimed the queen regent was divine about 10 years back. She had brown hair, I'm not sure about the skin. The stories say that her eyes turned indigo after she became a goddess.
Turned indigo?
Jonan muttered.
Yeah,
Lydia replied.
That's one of the things I've been thinking about. You saw her for the first time and immediately made the natural assumption that she was Rethri, since she has indigo eyes and no sclera. I should have pieced this connection together the moment you mentioned Rethri were missing, but someone's eyes changing after they become a god isn't exactly typical.
We just know so little about the real gods that I initially thought it was just one more piece of silly local propaganda.
Jonan considered the implication.
Could Varain be human, but with Rethri-like eyes? Gods, is that what they're doing to the children? Are they somehow stealing whatever essence makes Rethri eyes different from ours?
If the eye color difference is somehow connected with whatever gives Rethri their extended lifespan...
You shouldn't blame yourself for not considering every possible fact immediately. I tried to research this place, and I clearly haven't picked up as much of the local culture as you have. Even key facts like the origin stories of their gods.
Jonan adjusted his position in the bed, turning onto his side to look directly at Lydia. She nodded, acknowledging his remark.
You're right, of course. No one can take every piece of data that they've collected in a lifetime into account all at once. I still feel like I should have noticed something was wrong about those eyes, but now we have the clue at least, so we can investigate it.
Jonan nodded.
It's still possible she really is Rethri. Maybe she just was concealing her natural eye color before. I saw her use shadow sorcery at the very least, and she could see through my sight sorcery. If she's a sight sorceress herself, she could easily change the appearance of her eyes.
Or she could have been human this whole time, and decided at a certain point to make her eyes look like Rethri eyes,
Lydia pointed out.
Perhaps to convince Rethri to trust her.
Jonan pondered that.
Do you think she could have been the one who convinced the Rethri to come to this city?
He shook his head.
She really sounded like she thought these children were being protected here. She could have attacked me immediately, or called for guards, and she chose to talk.
Maybe she knew that if you had gotten this far in your research, you weren't alone, and she was feeding you a false lead, either to throw you off your search or to lay a trap.
Lydia stretched, suddenly standing up.
That's what I would do in her place.
Jonan scoffed at that.
That'd be playing an awfully long con. You'd really do something like that?
Lydia looked down at him, shaking her head.
I've been a court sorceress of Orlan for 2 years.
Point taken,
he said with a nod.
Okay, so maybe she's crazy devious like you apparently are. We can consider that. It's also possible that she's been deceived herself, or blackmailed maybe.
That sounds like a stretch. It sounds like you want to believe her,
Lydia pointed out.
You're not wrong, but she seemed so sincere.
Maybe, he said hesitantly.
But that older man I saw... She was very polite to him, like she reported to him.
If she's a goddess, that doesn't really make any sense.
What did he look like?
Lydia asked. Maybe an inch or two taller than Talion, short gray hair, white tunic, no spectacles, Jonan rattled off. I didn't catch a lot of other details.
That's fine. I know who you're talking about. I met him. That's Raymond Laurel, the facility's director. He rattled off all sorts of things to me about what they are supposedly researching there. He didn't mention anything medical, nor about children. He gave me a very guided tour of the building, showed me some alchemical labs, nothing too impressive. I think the tour was designed to bore me into wanting to leave. The important part is that he didn't look like Adon.
Lydia explained.
Hmm.
Well, that throws a hole in the most obvious explanation.
You said you've met Adon before? Was there no resemblance? Could it be the same man, but perhaps bereft of illusion magic to make him appear younger?
Not a bad thought,
Lydia admitted, pushing up against the wall in another stretching exercise.
No, they didn't look all that similar, but an illusion can conceal more than age, as I'm sure you know already, given your occupation. So yes, they could be the same person.
And I take it you didn't have a chance to check him with knowledge sorcery?
No,
Lydia scoffed.
That's normally considered rude.
Jonan chuckled softly.
That didn't stop you from using it on me.
There were somewhat different circumstances behind that, she said,
turning around with a half-smirk.
But you have a point. Please forgive me for dispelling your invisibility, capturing you, and interrogating you a little.
I think I can find it in my heart to forgive you.
Jonan rolled his eyes. Still, if you can find the justification... You should be rude to that man, too.
You can apologize to him later.
Lydia shrugged.
I'll consider it, but Raymond is a well-established scholar, and he's got quite a bit of financial backing. He has powerful friends that we wouldn't want to drag into this.
Those friends may already be into this, if having a goddess on a leash is any indication, Jonan pointed out.
I most sincerely doubt that he keeps her on a leash. That would be even ruder than using knowledge sorcery on someone without permission.
Jonan sighed. I see your point. If she does work for him in some capacity, it's probably not out of any actual subservience. Unless he's Adon, of course. Or Miros, but that seems unlikely, given that Miros is supposed to be younger.
Yes, Miros is only supposed to be around our age. He was a talented member of the Queen's Guard, and he was apparently raised to divinity for defending her against a rival god from another land. An interesting story, but yes, I agree. Raymond does not fit Miros' description. It's possible that Raymond could be blackmailing Varane somehow, as you mentioned earlier.
I don't think I said blackmail. Jonan rubbed at his temples. But maybe I did. It's hard to think with the walls spinning so quickly. I think I need a break from this.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this discussion already. You've gathered some excellent information. I think you can take a break while we consider all this. Are you feeling well enough to go back to sleep?
Lydia asked. Jonan shrugged his left shoulder. I could try. I'm still feeling awfully cold.
Sorcery exhaustion, Lydia said matter-of-factly. I was worried at first, but if you can hold a conversation with this little difficulty, you shouldn't need any medical help.
It'd be much easier to keep warm with some company, though, Jonan pointed out.
I'll see if Talion is up, she said in the same tone, walking toward the door.
I meant you, actually.
I'm a paladin of Cytira, Lydia said, shaking her head as she opened the door to leave the bedchamber.
Jonan turned to follow her with his gaze, quirking a brow. Does that mean you have to be celibate or pure or something?
No, she replied with a wry grin. It means I have refined tastes.
I'm plenty refined, Jonan insisted. Like aged coffee!
Lydia narrowed her eyes. I'm not sure you're supposed to age coffee.
Oh, Jonan said, giving a dejected look downward toward his bedsheets. My whole life has been a lie.
Lydia's laugh was beautiful, like a hummingbird making a beautiful sound. Jonan never was very good with analogies. Good night, Jonan, Lydia offered, a flash of humor still present in her voice. She closed the door behind her.
Good night, Lydia, he replied.
It really is cold in these sheets by myself. Jonan shivered.
Chapter 7 Inefficient Investments of Effort.
Focus.
Talion pressed two fingers of his left hand against the third runestone from the top of his unsheathed sword. The four runes beneath it glowed brightly with azure light, but the rune he touched, along with the two above it, remained unlit. His right hand gripped tightly around the hilt, holding the sword secure and ensuring the shimmering waves of colorless force that extended a hand's breadth outward from the blade did not come into contact with anything else. He knew from experience what the consequences would be if that devastating aura met any form of solid material.
It's been 2 years. I should be able to do this.
As he concentrated, Talion felt the sword's inexorable pull against his strength. Beads of sweat coalesced on his forehead, the hilt seemingly growing heavier with each passing moment.
Sekes, heed my call. Use my strength to focus your own. Let your outer edge meet with the blade within.
For just an instant, he thought he saw a hint of light flicker within the gray of the unlit rune of Eritar. Just as Lydia swung open the door to the room, shattering his concentration. The fourth lit rune, signifying Coronir, flickered and died, followed by the rune of Xeracillus after it. The rippling waves of force around the blade began to spread, and Talion snatched up his scabbard from his left side, quickly and carefully jamming the blade within. Lydia stared at him blankly for a moment, something unfamiliar in her expression. Awe, perhaps?
Is that... You can actually draw the blade?
Lydia's eyes focused on the now-filled scabbard,
her tone of voice matching her expression. Talion nodded.
Of course. I thought I had made that clear before. That's hardly the difficult part.
He tried not to let his bitterness sink into his words, but it was a paltry effort at best.
Cuts, Talion, I knew there was a chance, but it's different to actually see it. That's the Sekes, the real thing. And you can use it.
Lydia took a step forward, tilting her head down, as if it could give her a better look at the sword within the scabbard.
Not exactly.
He ran his fingers along the metal rim of the scabbard. Taking it out of the sheath is one thing. There's nothing special about that. I just use metal sorcery to seal the metal part of the scabbard against the blade when I'm not using it. When I want to draw the sword, I reverse the process.
He tapped his fingers against the cross guard, grimacing.
Being able to wield it in battle is another problem entirely. It's been 12 years since my parents let me pick up the sword for the first time. I still can't ignite more than 4 of the runes.
Lydia snagged a chair from near the door, the same one she had used when she had guarded it earlier, and sat down.
Why does that matter? What does igniting those runes do?
Talion shrugged his shoulders.
You saw the aura around the blade, I assume?
Lydia nodded.
So far as I can tell, the rune stones on the blade exist to condense that aura. The more of them are lit, the more the aura tightens around the blade. Presumably, with all of the runes lit, the aura would be flush against the blade itself. The problem is that the stones appear to require an external source of essence to operate. That means I need to feed my strength into the weapon to make them work.
Talion ran his fingers across the leather of the scabbard. So far as I can tell, this scabbard is the only thing that can resist being cut by that aura around the sword. It seems to have been designed to contain the weapon. Anything else, stone, metal, flesh, that touches the aura is torn apart.
You seemed to have some of the runes under control when I walked in,
Lydia said, gesturing at the weapon.
Some, he said sadly, is insufficient. When I swing the sword with any of the runes unlit, the aura around it whips forward, separating from the sword. The more runes I've managed to ignite, the closer the aura stays to the blade. But even with 4 runes lit, the most I've been able to manage, the force can extend out more than half the length and width of the blade itself. That's too large to control effectively, especially if I have any allies on the field.
Lydia pursed her lips.
It sounds like you've had bad experiences with it before.
Talion shook his head.
Only a few objects damaged so far, fortunately.
Eric Tarin gave my parents clear instructions that I was never to use it until I could control all 7 runes. As a result, my parents didn't even let me draw it until I was 8, and even then, they barely let me move it. As a child, this was awfully disappointing, but as I've grown older, I've seen the wisdom in restraint. The sword is worthless unless I can control it. And at this rate, that might be another 10 years, assuming I am still making any progress at all.
Lydia sat up, her expression contemplative.
Sounds like a worthwhile investment to me.
Talion sighed.
Sure. If I want to be able to murder people with relentless efficiency in the future, I see it as a great investment.
That sword isn't about murdering people, Talion.
She chastised him.
It's a symbol of the Taos Pantheon, and their protection of the mortal races. It's a sword for shielding others against monsters.
Then why, Talion asked, does it have no apparent function other than cutting things apart?
Lydia folded her arms across her chest, glowering slightly.
It's very likely that you simply do not know how to use it properly yet. Perhaps other powers will manifest when you are able to ignite the 7th rune. Perhaps it is a test to see if the wielder has sufficient force of will to keep the weapon's destructive powers at bay. Anyone who simply uses the sword to kill would be unworthy of its other abilities.
That sounds like a nice story, but it is only speculation.
It seems much more plausible that the sword simply wasn't made for me, or any mortal, to use. If igniting the runes requires essence, it might be that whoever it was built for, the god of swords, if your stories are true, had so much more essence than I do that using it properly was trivial for him, Talion offered.
Perhaps. But your explanation is not mutually exclusive with mine.
and there are other possibilities as well. Have you found any way to determine what the composition of that aura is?"
Talion shook his head. "No. My mother was proficient at knowledge sorcery, but any spell she used on the sword appeared to be blocked. She said the aura looks like motion sorcery, but it's persistent, which motion sorcery is not. She was able to identify the scabbard, however. That's just utilizing powerful protection sorcery. She had never seen protection sorcery on the same scale before, but that's all it is."
"Interesting," Lydia replied, raising a hand to adjust her glasses. "Very interesting."
"What's so interesting about that? It's just protection sorcery. Why would that..."
"Oh, you are a protection sorcerer yourself?" Talion guessed.
"That would explain how she survived that spell Istvan cast at me earlier," he realized.
Lydia nodded absently. "Yes, I was wondering if I could use that to help you. Maybe find a way to contain the aura even when it isn't sheathed."
Talion felt a sudden surge of hope.
"Really? I wouldn't have expected you to be willing to help, if you think it is some sort of divine test."
She waved a hand dismissively. "That was just one possibility. And even if it is a test, I'm a Cytiran. We solve tests through ingenuity."
"How'd you get involved with the Paladins of Taos anyway?"
Lydia took a breath. "One night when I was young, I woke to the smell of burning wood. I rushed to my youngest brother's room. Dyson was just a baby at the time. By the time I found him, the whole house was in flames. I didn't know any protection sorcery back then. I panicked and screamed. My parents didn't come for me. A stranger did. I remember hearing him shouting something. A prayer to Zeracillus, I realized later, and bursting into the room, choking and scorched. He carried us both out of the house. He was already badly burned when we emerged. He could barely stand, but the first thing he did was ask if anyone else was still inside. I saw my parents outside, but not my other brother or sister. I told him I thought there were still two other children within. Even as the flames burned hotter, he went back inside, chanting to the God of Flames to stand aside."
Lydia looked down, shaking her head.
"I had been wrong about Edwin. He was already outside. After the stranger rescued my sister, he stayed inside to try to find Edwin."
"Did he survive?" Talion asked.
"Only just. His partner arrived in time to drag him out of the wreckage and get him to a hospital. He was comatose for months, and a beam had crushed his leg. He'll never fight again. He will be lucky if he can ever walk."
Lydia tightened her jaw.
"And it was my fault."
"He was a paladin of Zeracillus, then?"
"Lysandri, actually. Paladins of Taos pray to all seven of our gods when the situation is appropriate. He was still comatose when I learned who he was. Kalor was a complete stranger, and he had risked his life to save us, while my parents had stood aside in fear. He was my hero. He is still my hero. I will never be worth what he did for me."
"When Istvan was attacking me, you stepped right in front of his spell without any hesitation," Talion pointed out. "You defended a complete stranger." She shook her head.
"It's not the same. The risk was minimal. I knew protection sorcery to keep me safe. And you might have been a stranger, but I suspected you were related to one of my gods."
"You can justify it all you want, but it was heroic from my standpoint."
"Thank you,"
he said. "I can see why you joined the Paladins, then. Why'd you choose Cytira?" Lydia tilted her head to the side.
"What do you mean?"
The swordsman shrugged at her. "I've never understood why people pick one god or another to worship, especially you Taos followers. If you worship seven gods, how do you pick one to focus on? I would have expected you to pick Lysandri, if that's who your rescuer worshipped." Lydia steepled her fingers, laying her hands in her lap.
"Well, for one thing, my compatibility tests indicated that the best fit for me would be with Eritar or Cytira."
Talion quirked a brow dubiously.
"Compatibility tests?"
"They're much like the sorcery aptitude tests you took as a child, I assume. We don't just take anyone who wants to pick up a sword. Applicants are tested to see if they qualify, and if they pass, The tests indicate where they would be the most appropriate. But I have a feeling you were looking for a more emotional answer, she noted, apparently examining his expression. Talion cracked his knuckles.
I was expecting one, at least. Do you really worship someone just because your superiors told you to?
Lydia shook her head. No, I suppose not.
I suspected I would choose Cytira long before I took the tests.
She's the patron of scholars, and I've had my nose in a book since I started to recognize letters. All the Taos gods have their value, but Cytira gives us knowledge. To me, that's the greatest gift anyone, divine or otherwise, can offer.
That does seem to suit you.
Talion stood and knelt in front of Lydia, putting a hand on her knee.
Well, knowledge about this sword would be a great gift indeed. I've had this supposed inheritance, this burden, for as long as I can remember. I'd be very grateful for anything you could do to help me use it.
Lydia sat up a little straighter in her chair, but she didn't flinch away from him.
Let's not get too carried away. I'll try to think of something, but it's going to require research, and I'm going to have to bombard you with a lot of questions.
Talion nodded vehemently.
Yes, I'm fine with that. Thank you.
She nodded, patting his hand.
Not a problem. In the meantime, I have another question for you.
Oh? Ask away, then.
You mentioned coming to the city to meet Eric Taran. I was very skeptical about that at first, but having seen that you can actually draw the weapon, I'm beginning to wonder if exploring that angle may have some merit. Did your parents tell you why Eric Taran left you with them?
He was in danger, and my parents got the impression that my birth parents had also been in danger, he said, standing up. They had been friends of Eric years before, and apparently Eric didn't think his enemies would be able to find me with them. He didn't tell them who my real parents were.
But he told them the city he was planning to go to. Seems like a poor idea, if he was fleeing from some sort of danger.
The sorceress ran a hand across her hair, narrowing her eyes.
I suppose he didn't think anyone would try to go after my parents for information about him. He hadn't seen them for years when he showed up with me. Anyway, I suppose it's possible Eric Taran was alive 20 years ago, but is not today. He certainly could have moved to a different city by now. But it is the best information I have.
I suppose if anyone would know about a wielder of the Sekhes, it would be Eric Taran,
Lydia mused. Talion began to pace around the room, but glanced back toward Lydia.
Do you know something about him? I mean, you and Jonan both knew his reputation as a scholar, but something more specific?
Lydia nodded.
Specifically? He's well known for writing treatises on sorceress theory. He's one of the foremost authorities on broad-scale sorcery, especially the applications of sorcery in warfare. He personally engineered the spell that resulted in the fall of Zixis.
That's very impressive.
It is, but I'm sure it did make him a host of enemies. And his political views were never very popular in Velthrin.
She paused, a half-frown crossing her face.
I have a bit of a personal interest in him as well. I never knew my real father. He left few things of value behind when he left my mother, myself in her belly being one of them, a book by Eric Taran being another.
Talion paused in his step, turning to face Lydia completely. A somber expression fell across his face.
I'm sorry. I know what it's like growing up without knowing your real father.
Lydia nodded and then shook her head, as if to dismiss the thought. A smile replaced her half-frown.
It's all right. My mother married another man when I was only 3, so I had a father figure for most of my childhood. The book has always left me with a hint of curiosity, however. Why'd he leave that book, in specific? It was an obscure one, too. The Nature of Worlds.
The sorceress gave a soft smile.
My mother couldn't read, and my father must have known that. Did he leave it for me, knowing that my mother was pregnant? I don't know if the author of the book would have any idea about my father's motives, but he's the only hint I have. My mother never told me my real father's name, or even a description.
I sympathize,
Talion offered.
Maybe we're related.
Lydia gave a scoffing laugh at that, pointing at his head.
Given our hair colors, I'd somewhat doubt it.
Agreed. I'm sure there are many children with stories similar to our own. Still, it's nice to have some common ground.
Lydia nodded in reply.
I feel the same. So, your parents, did they tell you anything about how to find Eric Taran, aside from the city?
Oh, of course. They gave me his address, Talion explained, rubbing at his still sweaty forehead with his off hand. I probably should have mentioned that earlier.
We haven't exactly had time to hunt him down until now, anyway. Jonan and I had plenty to do, and you seem to have been getting yourself into enough trouble to keep busy, too.
She gestured at his leg.
How's that feeling, anyway?
Only the most minor of agony now, thank you. I've been using the sacred sword of your religion as a cane, he said with a wink. Lydia rolled her eyes.
Just never tell any priests that you did that. They tend to be a little more fervent about the treatment of holy artifacts. Do you need me to redo your stitches?
He shook his head.
No, Jonan took care of it in the morning. I should be fine.
Are you sure? Last time he took care of your stitches, they didn't last the night,
Lydia pointed out.
You're overprotective. Comes with the sorcery, I assume.
He smiled.
I'll be fine. I have my sacred sword cane to take care of me, he said, tapping the sheath at his side.
I thought you were just teasing about that.
Not at all, he replied, smiling.
Want to come with me to look for Eric Taran?
Lydia pursed her lips.
Yes, but I really shouldn't be seen with you. It's a fairly significant risk.
He shrugged in response. I can wear a disguise. Jonan already gave me a cover identity, and I have a tailcoat that he rented. I could go buy a hat and some other accoutrements, if you'd feel more comfortable that way. The sorceress adjusted her glasses, and then looked him up and down.
If you can disguise yourself to my satisfaction, I'll go with you.
I'll consider that a challenge, Talion grinned. Talion looked ridiculous. He knew he looked ridiculous, and he seemed to be enjoying it significantly more than Lydia was. His strategy for avoiding notice was being so noticeable that no one would expect that he could be someone that was avoiding the law. The garb that Jonan had rented was now accompanied by some new additions. A tall hat accentuated with a plume of blue feathers, a half-length black cloak with golden trim, a half-mask that covered the upper portion of his face, and a new form of the Sekhes that actually made the sword and scabbard resemble a sword cane. He had purchased black dye and recolored the leather portion of the scabbard, which was the only part that had been consistently recognizable even when he changed the shape of the metal. The dye stank even after several hours of drying, but he felt the effect was worth it. Lydia could barely look at him without bursting into a fit of giggles, so he decided that his strategy was working. The perfect stranger was a large, single-floor tavern in the mercantile district. A wooden sign displaying the name over a painted image of a blue eye mask hung over the entrance, and Talion could hear the low murmur of the patrons conversing inside as they approached. Lydia had taken the time to change into less conspicuous garb, and thus she was wearing a brown tunic and pants similar to his own. Her insignia of rank were tucked safely into a pouch on her belt, just in case she needed to show them. And her hair was down. It was a glorious cascade of fire, and he often found his eyes wandering to the sheet of color. He wasn't sure if she had noticed his occasional staring. "This should be it," Talion said, pointing a thumb at the building. Lydia hooked his arm and tugged him toward the entrance.
"Come on, I could use a drink."
Talion chuckled as they approached the entrance.
You're in an atypically good mood.
Gotta blend in with the local atmosphere, she said,
but the smirk on her face told him that she actually was in a pleasant mood. He wasn't quite clear on why. Lydia pushed the door open, revealing a room longer than it was wide. At least 2 dozen customers were seated at various tables, and another 6 stood near the bar. Talion glanced side to side, taking in the patrons of the tavern. None of them seemed to give either him or Lydia any undue attention, but he felt somewhat unsettled regardless. Lydia dragged him toward the front, seeking the bartender as they had planned. When the man behind the bar turned around, she froze. So did he.
The man was tall, about 2 or 3 inches taller than Talion, and a good bit thicker. His rolled-up sleeves revealed that his bulk came from muscle, the kind of muscle you might see on a blacksmith or a lumberjack, or a soldier. His brown hair and neatly trimmed goatee were flecked with gray. His eyes focused on Lydia for a moment, scrutinizing, and then he tilted his head to the side.
"What can I get for you two?"
he asked, a half-grin cracking across his face.
"A mead for me," Lydia said, snapping out of her momentary paralysis. "And what about you, James?"
She put an odd emphasis on his name, but he got the impression it wasn't directed at him.
"One of those mead drinks, too," he said, quirking an eyebrow at Lydia.
She shook her head at him.
"Two flagons of mead it is,"
the bartender said, spinning around to walk to a series of cups and bottles up against the wall. Talion glanced at Lydia.
"Problem?"
"No," Lydia whispered. "Maybe. Don't worry about it."
"Maybe? That's not foreboding or anything."
A cup had appeared in front of Talion by the time he glanced back toward the bartender.
"Can I get you two anything else?"
the man asked. Lydia picked up her cup.
"I think my friend had a question for you."
"Oh?"
The bartender turned toward Talion.
"What sort of question?"
Talion suddenly felt very small.
"This is foolish. What are the odds this man knows anything about Eric Taran? I'm in the wrong place."
I heard I might be able to find Eric Taran here," Talion stammered, his hand fumbling for his drink. The man furrowed his brow.
"The scholar?
He turned toward Lydia.
"Might know a thing about that, but it might cost you."
Lydia nodded.
"We can pay."
"We can?"
Talion reached down with his left hand to feel for his coin purse, which, of course, he didn't have. It had been taken along with all of his other belongings when he had been captured, and he had not found anything else along with his sword. He had been borrowing money from Jonan to pay for the additional clothing.
"Come chat with me around back,"
the man offered, waving a hand toward a door behind the bar, and then opening the door and walking through it. Lydia grabbed her drink and followed immediately. Talion took another look around the room, scanning for anyone that looked hostile, but he just saw ordinary-looking customers. The only other people with weapons were a couple soldiers playing some sort of game of darts involving 3 separate boards near the opposite side of the room. After a quick glance behind him, Talion picked up his drink and scuttled after Lydia into the back room. Once Talion stepped inside, Talion scanned the room for threats immediately. Most of what he saw was crates and barrels, presumably containing more alcohol and supplies. A single, round, wooden table with a handful of stools around it sat toward the back. Atop it sat a deck of playing cards and a bottle of half-empty alcohol. There was a long spear leaning against the back wall, behind the table, the wooden shaft well concealed among the boxes and barrels. It was a simple weapon, but a weapon nonetheless. Talion took note of its position, but the bartender didn't head toward it. He stepped back closer to the pair of them and shut the door tightly.
"Grab a seat," he said, "and keep your voices low."
Lydia led the way, taking a seat all the way toward the back, facing where they had entered.
A good decision, from a strategic standpoint. I wonder if she chose that position deliberately.
Talion sat to her left side, awkwardly adjusting his scabbard and hilt to keep them from knocking into the table. The bartender walked over toward Lydia a moment later, balling his right hand into a fist. In the moment while Talion tensed for a fight, the bartender crisply brought the fist to his chest and then released it.
"Surprised to see you here, Lydia. Is he one of ours?"
Lydia made a fist and raised it to her own chest.
"It's a salute,"
Talion realized, breathing a sigh of relief.
"He must be a paladin like her."
"No,"
Lydia replied, gesturing at Talion.
"But he might be more than that."
"I've heard a few rumors,"
the man nodded. He turned to Talion, stretching out a hand.
"Sorry for being rude. I'm Gerald Mason."
Talion clasped the man's hand at the wrist. "Talion Solaris, The pair gave each other a brief squeeze at the wrist, displaying that they had no hidden weapons in their sleeves, and then released their grips with an exchange of nods. Lydia glanced over to Talion.
You never told me that last name before.
I was your prisoner when we made our introductions, and it isn't my last name, precisely. It is my birth name, whereas Talion is a title I took as my surname. I don't have a family name since I was adopted. Talion took a sip of his drink. What a strange beverage. Tastes almost like honey.
Ah, thought so. You must be the one Byron is all flustered about,
Gerald said, raising a hand to his chin. Lydia raised an eyebrow.
What do you mean?
Gerald lowered his hand in a quieting gesture.
Keep it down, Hastings. And I can't talk long. Tom will take over the bar, but he'll come looking for me in a few. Anyway, it's nothing secret. There are posters up around town.
Posters? You mean like bounties for criminals? Talion asked, leaning forward against the table.
Not wanted posters, Gerald said. They're a challenge. They say that the bearer of the Talion is challenged to appear in the court of the spear, or something along those lines. Basically, the prince is offering the Talion a chance to fight to prove his innocence of some sort of crime. I thought it was just a prank at first, but the number of posters indicated a real effort. And then after a day or so, I started hearing that some of them have the royal seal on them. Forging that is a high crime.
Yeah, that's talking about this Talion, Lydia said. I'm not sure how much else I should say.
Talion quirked a brow.
Why not?
I take it he's one of your fellow... Lydia shoved a finger in Talion's face.
Never say that word aloud in this city.
Talion frowned, but he went quiet.
We're in a closed room, but you're pretty loud, and it's a bad habit to start spouting information that could get someone killed, and yes, he is. But we're not supposed to know about each other, Lydia said.
Don't be too hard on the lad.
Gerald finally took a seat on the opposite side of Lydia.
Look, Solaris, people like Lydia and I are doing work that isn't exactly legal here. We're not supposed to know about others like us, in case we get caught and interrogated. It's a big city, and there aren't many of us. At least I assume there aren't. So we don't run into problems like this very often.
The more information we share with one another, the more we could potentially give away if one of us is captured.
Lydia continued the explanation.
So we're going to be a little vague with each other here.
Aye, but we can talk a bit.
Gerald turned toward Talion.
Any idea why the Crown Prince wants you in the arena?
Talion glanced at Lydia, and she nodded to him.
I was arrested for carrying a symbol of the Taos Pantheon when I first arrived in the city. I was imprisoned in a strange cell in the Low Palace. I'm still not sure on why. Calling what you carried a symbol is an understatement. Show him the sword's real form, Talion.
Lydia made an expression of wry amusement. Talion nodded, raising the scabbard.
Revert,
he commanded the metal. The metal shell retreated from around the pommel jewel, and the crossguard expanded outward, reforming into a pair of silvery wings. Gerald gawked openly for a moment, and then raised his fist to his chest again. Talion almost responded before realizing that Gerald was saluting the sword, not him.
God's around us,
Gerald muttered. He turned to Lydia.
If he can change the shape, how do you know that form is the real one, and not the other form?
It was taken away from him for several hours, and it looked like that. The Sagas Talion, during that time. None of my efforts to identify its functions have succeeded. It has powerful sorcery, and I could not even draw it out of the scabbard myself. Talion here can draw it, and I've seen him make several of the runes on the surface glow,
Lydia rattled off.
My,
Gerald said.
I never thought I'd actually see. Amazing. Would you be willing to show me the blade?
It's dangerous, Talion warned. I'll just draw it out a little. He stood up, drawing the blade enough to expose the unlit rune of Lysari near the bottom of the blade. To further the demonstration, he took a breath and concentrated, feeling a surge of his essence flood into the weapon. The rune flashed azure, and he snapped the sword back into the sheath.
Beautiful,
Gerald said.
Thank you. I never believed I'd see it with my own eyes.
So, Talion walked into the city with the Sekhes, and someone in a high place, presumably Byron, panicked. Byron's coronation is in a few weeks. It's very plausible that he thought Talion was sent either to make some sort of political statement, or perhaps to assassinate him during the coronation.
Lydia tapped a finger on the table, apparently thinking.
According to rumors, Miros discovered an armed group, presumably assassins, skulking about the High Palace a few months ago. They say that's why the coronation was delayed. I assume the prince and the queen regent are somewhat on edge, given that the new date for the coronation is fast approaching.
Talion scratched at his chin.
I wasn't hiding the sword, though. I mean, if I showed up in the middle of the coronation and attacked Byron with the Sekhes, sure, that'd be a pretty serious political statement. But if I was going to do that, wouldn't I have made some effort to conceal the sword when I came into the city?
Gerald shrugged. If you're afraid of being killed, you're not necessarily thinking rationally. Besides, even if you're not an assassin, I'm sure having the sword of an outlawed religion in this city at the time of your coronation would be disconcerting. Maybe he's worried about you inciting a rebellion.
Wouldn't be enough people to do much with that,
Lydia noted.
But you're right. Byron probably isn't thinking that way.
Why challenge me openly, then? Wouldn't that just call attention to my presence?
Lydia rubbed a hand against her left temple.
That depends on how the challenge is structured. Do you know the details, Gerald?
Says that if he wins, he'll be given an ambassadorship. Seems like a reasonable tactic. If Talion loses, he's removed from the picture, either by being killed or imprisoned. If Talion wins, he's made into a public figure, where Byron can assign people to keep an eye on him.
Talion nodded.
Thank you for the insight. Why did you invite us into the back when I first asked about Eric Taran?
Talion asked.
Gerald folded his arms.
I thought you were a part of the organization that Lydia and I belong to. That's a code name for one of our missions.
Lydia seemed visibly taken aback by that.
Really? You mean they're actually—
Oh, Master Taran isn't actually here, Gerald explained. Sorry to disappoint you. It's just named after him.
Talion's shoulders slumped.
My family sent me to find him. They said I should look for him here.
Are your parents members of my organization?
Gerald asked. Talion shook his head.
Not that I'm aware of. Not the parents that adopted me, at any rate. Perhaps my biological parents were, but I don't know their names.
The bartender took a breath, shaking his head.
If you're here about Master Taran, I'm afraid you're about 10 years too late. He used to own this tavern. Members of our organization would meet here, and he'd teach them. This was before my time. When he left the city, he left the tavern to a friend, who in turn passed it off to me. I doubt the old man is still around, sad to say. He was ancient.
It's possible he's still alive, given that he most certainly knew how to extend his life with sorcery,
Lydia pointed out.
What's this mission that's named after him? Was he involved in it? Can you tell us anything about the mission that could potentially be relevant to Talion?
Yes. Anything, please. I need to know.
Gerald scratched at his chin.
There was a battle many years ago between the armies of General Theron of Whitestone and Virek Sul, the Emperor of Azixis. During their final battle, Eric Taran cast a spell that shattered Virek Sul's weapon, Cesius, the Staff of Dissonance. He later successfully banished Virek Sul to another world. Sul's followers gathered up the pieces of Cesius and hid them away in secret vaults, awaiting their master to return to this world and reclaim his empire.
I've heard the story, although I heard that Theron was the one that destroyed the staff. Anyway, the details are largely irrelevant,
Lydia mentioned.
This was a Azixian city,
Talion realized.
You think Cesius is here?
Master Taran thought a piece of it might be here,
Gerald said.
He never found it, though. After he left the city, our organization decided to pick up where he left off. They named the mission in his honor. I don't know where Taran went after he left here, unfortunately.
Talion nodded. Thank you. You've already helped a great deal. More than you know. Cesius, the Staff of Dissonance. The weapon of the Azixian Emperor. Perhaps I meant to help finish Eric Taran's work.
Sorry, kid. Finish the drink. It's on me. Maybe it'll help you feel a little better, Gerald offered. Lydia, I've got to get back. Pretending you are paying me for information is one thing, but this is taking a little long for that.
Lydia nodded and smiled sadly.
It was good to see you, Gerald. We probably won't be meeting again anytime soon.
Well, here's hoping we both finish our secret mission soon, so we can go home.
Gerald stood up from the table.
I'll drink to that,
Lydia smiled, raising her cup and bumping it against Talion's. Startled, he spilled an inch of liquid and nearly fell backward, triggering a cascade of laughter from the two paladins.
Paladins. I'll never understand them.
Talion took a drink and stood to leave.
Gerald, before I go,
you said you didn't know where Taryn went, but do you have any idea who might?
Gerald shook his head. He didn't tell my predecessor, as far as I'm aware. He was close with some of the leaders of my organization, but I don't think they'd give his location away easily if they had it. Of course, since you're carrying the sword of the gods around, I take it you're actually someone important to us. Maybe someone very important, as Lydia was implying earlier. If I had any advice, I'd say you should talk to someone at the top of my chain of command. Maybe Orin Dyer.
Talion scratched the back of his head.
I suppose that makes sense. I might do that.
Thank you.
I'm in your debt.
Don't be forgetting that if you do turn out to be important, Gerald grinned. And also, you might want to cover that sword back up.
Ah, right. Ordinary.
The metal stretched back into its inconspicuous state, and Lydia clenched her jaw as she watched. She still didn't seem to like the idea of modifying her order's sacred symbol.
I guess we should head home then, Talion said.
Not before I finish my drink,
Lydia insisted, elbowing him as they stepped out of the back room. A smile had returned to her face, and Talion mused that he liked her much better with that expression. Later that evening, Talion glanced at a piece of parchment nailed to one of the city's many announcement boards. It read, "In the name of Crown Prince Byron, the bearer of the Sakes Talion is challenged to fight for the truth of his gods in the Court of the Spear on the 9th day of Highwall, at the 4th hour after the rising of the Dawnfire. Should the bearer of the Sakes Talion be successful in this challenge, he will be treated as an honored ambassador and granted a boon of his choice." Talion smirked, attaching a parchment of his own atop it. His reply read, "Challenge accepted." Chapter 8. Definitely a trap.
Just so we're both clear, you're aware that this is obviously a trap, right?
Lydia asked, her arms folded across her chest. Talion shrugged, leaning back against the wall near the door to Jonan's kitchen.
Sure, but it also presents an opportunity. If I win, I can demand knowledge about the captive Rethri in a public area.
Lydia shook her head.
That's not a good strategy. They could just have the Rethri moved, or even killed, or just deny knowledge of the situation. You have no proof, and Byron might not even know about the Rethri anyway.
Jonan walked in, passing Talion to lay a plate of steaming meat and vegetables in the section of the table.
How'd you cook that?
Lydia quirked an eyebrow at Jonan.
Magic, he said, waving his hands in the air in a seemingly meaningless gesture and retreating back into the kitchen for more dishes.
Lydia shook her head, switching back to a more important train of thought. She looked back to Talion.
If you're going to ask for a boon, don't use it to try to publicly humiliate the local leaders. Do something friendly. Get on the inside. We can do more effective work that way, but that's assuming you can win, which, I'm going to be honest, I don't think is a very good idea to bet on. They have every advantage here. Information, territory, numbers. We don't even know what challenge they will present you with. It certainly won't be fair.
Talion grinned.
That's the type of situation I do best with. Besides, they're not going to want to kill me. I'm too important as a political prisoner, right?
Lydia quirked a brow at him.
No. Not at this stage. You've already escaped once. They are not likely to take that risk a second time. Moreover, an arena is the perfect place to have you removed. No matter how rigged the match might be, they can claim you died in honorable combat. If anyone tried to retaliate on your behalf, they will look like the villains, at least to the people of this city.
Well, I suppose I'll just have to make sure not to